Welcome back to Across the Bifrost. Before we dive into this week's episode where we talk about the Brotherhood, I do want to take a moment and shout out the brand new Nexus Pat and I have helped create. So AcrossTheBifrost.com is serving as a Nexus or a bridge or a Bifrost, if you will. Huh? See what I did there? Kind of unifying and giving you one place to find a whole lot of Marvel Crisis Protocol content. We have over 20 different content creators on the site right now, between blogs, podcasts, videos, and we also have some lists that have done really well on recent events and more features coming every day. So check it out at AcrossTheBifrost.com. We also have an RSS feed for it for Across the Bifrost Nexus. You can find that on Spotify or iTunes. But again, it's a great place to go if you're not sure what other content you want to listen to. It's a great place to discover other content creators. There are so many great content creators out there all making really fantastic pieces. We wanted to just bubble that up and make it easier to discover. So anyway, I'll stop rambling now. Please check out AcrossTheBifrost.com. Please link it on any social media. We really, really appreciate that. I've kind of given up social media. So hey, that's one way you could really help me. And we want it to grow. We want it to become ubiquitous. We want to make it as easy as possible for someone brand new to Marvel Crisis Protocol to find all the content they could possibly ever want. So please check us out at AcrossTheBifrost.com. All right, without any further ado, here's my conversation with Pat Dunford about the Brotherhood.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a
Welcome back to the latest episode of Across the Bifrost. This is session two of our X-Men extravaganza, and today we're going to be talking about the Brotherhood of Mutants. But before we dive into that, I'm joined as always by my co-host from across the pond, Pat. Pat, how you holding up?
I'm holding up real good, thanks, TT. I really like Brotherhood. They might be my new favorite affiliation. They're really cool, and I cannot wait to discuss them more.
They are, I think, officially my new favorite affiliation, and I'm doing a Roster Doctor with Mark Garreau about Brotherhood, so you can check for that wherever you listen to Roster Doctor. But I'm excited to jump into this, and I thought we'd start with the leader himself, the man in Magento, Magneto.
Magento?
See what I did there?
Yeah. Yeah, it's clever. So Magneto is the most powerful of all the mutants. He is a six-threat character. He has six stamina on his healthy side and eight more on injured for 14 in total. He moves short. He is size 2, and he's on a 50mm base, the medium base size. He has 3 physical defense, 3 energy defense, and 6 mystic defense, thanks to his incredible helmet. And he's got 2 magnet-related attacks. The first is reverse polarity, range 3, 6 dice physical. Gives him power equal to damage dealt, and if the target character is within range 2, he gets to reroll all his attack dice. And if not, he gets to push them short in any direction. His second attack is Shrapnel Blast. It's an area 2, 6 dice. It costs 5 power to use, and it's also physical. It has a cool rule. When measuring range and line of sight for this attack, you may choose to measure from a metal construct within range 3 of this character, instead of from Magneto. If you do, after the attack's resolved, the metal construct is destroyed. And after each attack is resolved, the target character gains the stun special condition. Now, normally we take a break here to give our hot takes, but considering we've already discussed metal constructs, I'm just going to keep on rolling through the superpowers to explain what those are. So his first superpower, Fatal Attraction, is a throw. It costs X power. Basically, you spend between 1 and 4 power to throw a terrain piece of that size that's within range 3 long. So spend 2 power, you throw a size 2 terrain long. And Magneto can spend additional power to use this multiple times. So he can use it a second time for 1 power, a third time for 2 power, etc. Force Projection is a reactive power, costs 2 to use, and lets Magneto use his mystic defense of 6 in place of his other stats when doing a defense or dodge roll, and he cannot be pushed or thrown as the result of special rules from the attack or the collision. Master of Magnetism lets him place metal constructs. He places one in the power phase within range 3. A metal construct is a terrain feature that's on a small base. It's size 2. And he gets extra power for each construct. So if you place one construct, you're getting 2 power in the power phase. If you place your second, you're getting 3. 2 constructs is the most you can have at any time. And finally, he has flight. TT, do we talk about him now, or should I cover the leadership too?
I think we need to cover the leadership, because I honestly don't think he's super... Well, I mean, he's very power hungry. So let's go ahead and cover the leadership.
Yeah, the leadership is a very important part of his total kit, right? It's called From the Ruins, and it says, when a terrain feature is destroyed, after the effects resolve, choose a number of allied characters equal to or less than the terrain feature's size. Each chosen character gains a power. A character can gain only one power as a result of this leadership ability per turn. So if you destroy a size 3 truck, 3 of your Brotherhood characters get 1 power each, for example.
Yeah, well, they don't have to be Brotherhood characters, right? It's just allied, which is important, I suppose.
I'm sorry, yeah. I meant allied, but that was not very clear. So, Magneto. Wow. He is a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, it's a lot to take in, right? I do want to say one thing. I think you slightly misspoke on reverse polarity, right? You said he can reroll any of his attack dice, right? Which is obviously more powerful than all. So if they're within range 2, that's a really, really efficient builder there, right?
It's maybe the best builder in the game. I certainly can't think of many that I would rather have, right? Because it's got a good range at 3. It has this dual mode, and both modes are incredibly powerful. 6 dice reroll all is the highest damage for a power-generating builder in the game. And a push in any direction without any requirements to trigger that push is also really strong. And of course, it combos with itself in the sense that if you're range 3 away from your target, your first reverse polarity could pull them in, and then the second can reroll dice.
Yeah, I mean, it's up there with Psionic Blast. It's an incredibly powerful attack, right? I think his attack suite is phenomenal. I actually really like Shrapnel Blast. It's important to keep in mind that when the metal construct is destroyed from Shrapnel Blast, that will trigger from the ruins. He has a lot of ways to spend power, and he has some interesting ways to gain power.
Yeah, between Master of Magnetism and From the Ruins, plus Reverse Polarity giving huge amounts of power, I've played quite a lot of games with Magneto now. I really like him. I've been jamming games with him, and I find that he has really no shortage of power. It's pretty common for his average turn to like start on 4 or 5 power and then end on the same amount, just because he gains so much during his activation.
Yeah, so I guess I've been playing a lot of games with him as well, and I wonder, do you ever take him without his leadership?
I think you can, but I never have. And I feel like he's a bit like Captain America in that regard, in the sense that as a character, he synergizes so well with his leadership that if you're taking him, you feel like you're kind of obliged to take the leadership too.
Yeah, and that's basically what I've done, or felt like in my few games. Like, when I'm playing him outside of it, like, he feels fine, right? He just doesn't feel nearly as good as he does when he's in his affiliation. So I personally, I'm deciding right now if he's predominantly in his own affiliation.
He doesn't necessarily have to be. We know that he's also affiliated with Cabal, and he has some solid synergy there as well, right? In particular, Shrapnel Blast is an area of attack that can net you quite a lot of power gain, similar to how his leadership returns you power after using it.
He likes Red Skull's place, right? And you certainly don't mind Cosmic invigorating him.
Exactly. So he could be a replacement for MODOK and Cabal teams. And he just, honestly, he's just so powerful, right? He's very resilient. He dishes out huge amounts of damage. I think a lot of teams might want him just if they want to take a heavy hitter in their roster.
Yeah, that's very fair. I've messed around with him in Avengers, right, to just leverage force projection as much as possible. But he's a good character, and maybe you're convincing me with the Cabal thing. But I've mainly enjoyed him in Brotherhood of Mutants.
One shout-out place that I have for him is Web Warriors. Because he's a really cool anchor for a team that in any crises where you just need to fight, he's very good at fighting. And Web Warriors don't like fighting, and people often make them play things like Demons Downtown to try and capitalize on that. And I've spoken in the past how I like to take MODOK for if your opponent forces your Web Warriors to fight, and I think Magneto does a better job, where he can sit in the middle of the table, be ridiculously hard to deal with the extra defense reroll on top of his 6 dice, and He benefits from the reroll skulls with his reverse polarity, and it makes his power building attack even better. So I think he's pretty good in that team as well.
No, that's a good shout out. I'd really have to break down the rosters and where you could take him, but no, I like that as well. So I think we agree. I think he's an incredibly compelling character. I love how dynamic he is. I love that he comes in sixth threat, and he feels like a sixth threat character on the table.
Yeah, his damage output is nuts, right? His best case scenario for damage, I think, is the highest in the game, where he can have turns where he gets to make either big AoEs with Shrapnel Blast that hitting multiple people, or he gets to make a pair of reverse polarities that reroll dice. And then on top of that, he can throw out multiple pieces of terrain. And he can get this kind of terrain machine gun going, where he can throw two or three things at a persistent character and just ensure that they get taken out.
So I do want to take a moment and, do we want to talk about list building with him now or later?
I think we're going to have so much to cover in this episode, we should just touch on it very briefly and move on, because there's so much to cover for Brotherhood. They've got so many tactics cards.
That's fair, and they're all really good, spoilers. Yeah. I don't like a team where everyone has a throw. And I will explain. You run out of things to throw really, really quickly. I never thought I would say that, but there are so many games where I've played, when I was playing these throw-heavy teams, and like middle of the third round, I'm like, well, I'm going to throw one thing per round, and that's my construct I'm making, because I'm just out of stuff to chuck. So just keep that in mind. I understand the temptation of just like, I'm going to take Valkyrie. I'm going to take every character that has a throw. But I think you need a little bit of balance with that, and we'll kind of cover some of the shortcomings of the Brotherhood affiliation as we go through the rest of this podcast.
Yeah, I think that's a great shout-out, TT. I found that you want a mix, right? You want some characters with throws, and then you want some characters who benefit from the power generation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really, really easy to find characters that kind of fill that out, and we'll do a full episode of the Brotherhood later, but I just wanted to shout that out as people are kind of exploring. I understand the temptation to just take everyone that can throw. I don't think it's as good as you think it's going to be.
Yeah, it burns out real fast. And not to mention, you might just play on a table that doesn't have a lot of terrain, right? And then you're going to feel pretty silly.
There is that table on Tabletop Simulator, right? Where it is that giant size 5 building in the middle. Magneto does not like that table.
Oh, yeah. There's that very little terrain.
There's no terrain. It's just exactly. Yeah. But anyway, moving on from that, is there anything else to talk about from Magento?
There's a huge amount, but I think we've got to save it for the next episode when we go deep on strategy, because there's also a huge amount to discuss for the rest of the Brotherhood.
Yeah, so in short, he's really good. Use him, flex with him. He's incredibly powerful. We really, really like him, and there's a lot more, and expect more content on him. But for the sake of moving forward, there is another affiliation leader for the Brotherhood, and that is Mystique.
Mystique. She is the cheap and cheerful leader to Magneto's expensive powerhouse. She is a 3-threat character. She has 5 stamina on either side, so 10 in total. She's a long mover, which is always welcome, and she's size 2. Her defenses are the very average 3-3-3 across the board. Her first attack is a pistol. Range 3, 4 dice physical, generates 1 power after the attack is resolved, and has rapid fire. So this is the same effect as we've seen on models like Black Widow, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., but key difference, this rapid fire requires a hit to trigger. So you're not guaranteed to get the second shot. And I believe the odds of getting a rapid fire on a hit with 4 dice are something like 75%. So it's going to happen most of the time, but not every time. Her second attack is Espionage. This is range 2, 6 dice, physical attack that costs 3 power. And it simply says, before damage is dealt, the target character gains the stun special condition. And I really like applying stun before damage.
Yeah, I like it as well. But I think it's pretty clear that if we're looking for a damage dealer, I don't think that's why we're taking Mystique, right?
No, I mean, definitely true. The pistols are pretty good damage for free attack, but they're unreliable because of the hit requirement for rapid fire. One thing I would say about the stun is she synergizes. She's good in a damage dealing team because of the synergy of being able to assure a stun on a target that perhaps you would then want to destroy with Magneto, for example.
Okay, sure.
So her powers, her first is Expert Sabotage. This is a 3-cost active power. It's an action. It lets her blow up terrain. It's exactly the same as Warzone for Punisher. You choose a terrain feature of size 3 or less within 4 of Mystique, and enemy characters within 1 of the terrain suffer 2 damage. Then the terrain feature is destroyed. You can only use this power once a turn. Automatic damage is really good. Blowing up people's cover is really good. And obviously it has synergy with Magneto's leadership. She has a bunch of innate powers. Martial Artist, a classic power that's very powerful. It lets her count blanks as defenses when using physical or energy defense within range 2 of the attacker. Stealth, always welcome. And Shapeshifter. During this character's activation, enemy characters cannot use reactive superpowers or reactive team tactics cards. So this is a very unique power, right? That has a lot of unusual interactions.
Yeah, I think this is the big one, right? This is when Captain America cries, but I think that power is incredible.
Yeah, and to your point there, right? It turns off Bodyguard, which is really cool. Turns off Intimidating Presence. Turns off characters' abilities to boost their defenses with things like Vibranium Shield. Stops you using things like Lifesaver, cards like Lethal Protector, Sacrifice. There's a huge number of abilities that this prevents, and most of them are defensive. And that definitely helps her damage dealing potential a little bit.
Yeah, it helps situationally for sure, right?
Yeah. One thing I'd say, maybe I should read her leadership before we go deeper onto strategy for her, actually. So I'll go to leadership and then I'll hold my point for a sec. So her leadership is called Freedom Force. Once per turn, after an allied character interacts with an extract objective token, after all effects are resolved, the allied character gains 1 power. So you get your power refunded when you pick up extracts. Additionally, allied characters can use the following interact ability. This is an interact ability with secure objectives, and you get to place a marker on top of the objective. And as long as that token is in play, you secure the objective. It gets removed when an enemy character comes and contests the objective. So you can basically put down this token, control an objective, and walk away from it.
Yeah, it's interesting, and we'll kind of cover it. Like I guess we can get spoilers, right? Brotherhood doesn't have like a traditional sit on the back of a D character, but you can get away with it using Freedom Force, right?
Yeah. Yeah, if you don't want your unaffiliated slot to be that backline role, you absolutely can use Freedom Force, and it's especially good, I think, on the D crisis maps where your home objective can be a bit of an anchor. You have to commit a character to just sitting, scoring 1 point a turn, and this is a nice alternative to that strategy. I also really like it on the secures that punish you for holding them, right? You can use... We talked in our previous episode with X-Men about how things like Witness Protection and Demons Downtown give you status conditions that the X-Men like. Well, the Brotherhood can avoid those penalties, right, by controlling it with this token instead of having one of their characters take the hit.
Yep, very fair. Very true.
So I think it's a really cool leadership all in all. I like it. I'm not sure yet when I would choose it over Magneto.
And that's kind of the problem that I come back to, right? Right now, with only the 4 characters announced for them, like, Magneto is just so much more compelling. I think that Mystique could grow into something amazing, but like, we'll see what AMG comes out with when they come out with it. So I think it's a good affiliation. I think it just suffers because it's next to like a behemoth of affiliation.
Yeah, the two leaderships. I agree. I do think it's nice to have the flexibility, and I think Mystique's leadership is more dependent on the crisis combination, and Magneto's is more dependent on the amount of terrain and your character selection. And because of those different dependencies, there absolutely will be times where Mystique's is better. I just don't know how often that's going to come up.
Yeah, I think it kind of falls in the same realm as like First Class, right? Where if you have a plan for it, it could be very powerful. But there's a lot of variables for that to come out, right?
Yeah. I do think it's cool, though, that it's a perfectly good leadership. There's nothing wrong with it. And because Mystique is such a cheap leader, it gives you this good option if you want to run a Brotherhood team at a lower threat value and you don't want to have to take Magneto. She is a perfectly good leader, in my opinion.
Yeah, also very fair, right? You could get that like 8-point affiliation at that stage, right? instead of having to use Magneto, who himself costs 6.
Yeah, so you take her Toad and then a 3-point rogue agent. Bargain.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
So what do you think about her as a character aside from her leadership?
She's... you can take Sabretooth, too. We don't have to take a rogue agent. Oh, no,
yeah,
he's 4.
He's 4. Yep.
I like her. She's been one of those weird characters on the tabletop, right? Like, I like Expert Sabotage. That combines with Magneto really, really well. Martial Artist is always really strong. Martial Artist with Stealth, we've seen before, is a nice combination. I've been really impressed with Shapeshifter when I remember she has the superpower. So I like her as a three-threat character. She's a good, flexible character. I enjoy her.
Yeah, me too. I like that she's kind of feels like an upgraded Black Widow from the core set, right? In the sense they're both long movers with martial artists and stealth. She's a bit tougher because she's got more stamina and she's got a wider array of effects to deal with enemy characters, right? She dishes out a bit more damage. She can apply stun very reliably. I think she's cool. In regards to Shapeshifter, I think this power is good but not great in isolation because her attacks are not that strong. But I think it's really, really good when you start to combo it with Team Tactics cards because it basically kind of gives a layer of protection to your strategy where, for example, she's a good Doom Prophecy target, right? She's got a rapid fire pistol. She can use Doom Prophecy to dish out a bunch of high damage attacks. And at that point, turning off enemy bodyguards and defensive abilities becomes very strong. And there's a bunch of other cards she can synergize with as well. I don't know if you heard about this, TT, but somebody on Discord was talking about running her in Wakanda just so that you can wait for her activation to play Wakanda forever and turn off your opponent's reactions to your whole team's effects.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, I mean, anything that's giving you an attack or an interact or even like a throw, like a heave-ho outside of activation becomes a little more powerful with her, right? I like her. I think she's a decent three-threat character. She's a welcome addition. She's no Magneto, but she's a welcome addition, right?
Yeah, when we get to her dedicated tactics card, I have a lot to say about that card. But ignoring that for now, I think she is a really solid character. I've enjoyed using her. I think she's a perfectly fine 3.
Yeah, so now we're going to talk about the best character out of any of these X-Men boxes, right? Mm-hmm. Mr. Mortimer Toad himself.
Yeah, the highlight of the release cycle this month, for sure. Magneto, move over. Toad, what a powerhouse. He is a two-threat character. He has 5 stamina on his healthy side and 3 on his injured sides for 8 in total. He's a medium mover, size 2, and his defense is a 3-3-3. His first attack is his Tongue Lash, a range 3, 4 dice physical attack that gives power equal to damage and has a wild push effect, pushes characters of size 2 or less. And his second is Spit Acid, range 2, 5 dice energy for 2 power. After the attack is resolved, the target character gains the Incinerate special condition.
I like him. It's for a two-threat character. They seem like reasonable attacks, right? He can't push Beast, but there's plenty of characters he can push. And the guaranteed Incinerate is actually pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree.
And let's be clear, you're spending for that builder for the Incinerate. You are not excited about the 2-5.
No, I mean, it's still his best damage. So you might do it if you're desperate just to take somebody out. But the Incinerate's cool. And I wanted to shout out in particular, Incinerate has a nice synergy with Mystique, right? Where she's got her pistol that's making multiple low damage attacks. And it sets her up to actually be the damage dealer we were talking about.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So yeah, I like Toad so far, but what about his superpowers?
He has so many superpowers. His first, Finders Keepers. This is a 2-power action. And it lets him take a extract token from an allied character within range 2 of him. The second is Hop, 2 cost active, lets him place within range 2 of his current position, can only be used once per turn. The third is Slippery, 2 power cost reactive. After an attack targeting him is resolved, if he suffered any damage, he can advance medium. Then he's got Prehensile Tongue, which lets him interact with objective tokens from range 2 instead of the normal 1, and he's got Wallcrawler. So this is a whole suite of powers that make him very mobile and very good at playing the objective game.
Yeah, I really like Toad. I think he's got an incredible suite of powers. I think he's a lot of fun on the tabletop. I think he can surprise a lot of people. I've really enjoyed playing him.
Yeah, me too. I think he's really interesting because I think he works well in a damage-focused team as your character that's trying to deal with the objectives while you also deal damage with every other character, if that makes sense, because he can just apply incinerate to people that need to be murdered, and he has so many options for keeping you relevant on the crisis. And he's also just really good in dedicated victory point grabbing teams. And I like how slippery lets you move in any direction. A medium move is a long way. And with 5 stamina on his healthy side, I don't have a lot of fear of running him out early in first turn, grabbing one of my opponent's extracts, and then expecting to use slippery to escape if they try and attack me.
Yeah, I've actually slotted him into like Avengers-focused scenarios a lot of times, and I like slippery for one is incredible. He's got a lot of he's very slippery.
Yeah, and with hop plus his prehensile tongue, he can grab objectives from a long way away. One thing that I've seen people frequently forget is that Finders Keepers cost an action, and I see this ability misplayed a lot, where people move objectives from him without using that action. I've also seen them steal objectives from enemies, which obviously is not what this ability does. So I just wanted to call out that this one is often misunderstood. But even with the less powerful incarnation that is permitted by the rules, I think overall Toad is a really, really good, cheap character.
Yeah, I like him a lot. And I did have a question, Pat. How do you think he synergizes with Magneto?
I think he does not synergize very well, in the sense that Magneto deals most of his damage from throws and Incinerate doesn't care about that. And Magneto is pretty good at controlling characters through Daze and KO. But what he does do is he synergizes for your strategy rather than with the character in particular by being cheap and focused on objectives so that Magneto can be expensive and focused on murder. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. They don't have like a direct synergy. Obviously, just coming in at that cheap value to try to hit that affiliation seems really powerful. So I've liked them with it. I can, I mean, they go together fine.
Yeah,
I do like
that he's just good, right? He's just a good character. So it's like, well, he doesn't necessarily directly synergize with Magneto, but he's just good. So it's fine.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. And I like that his damage picture is just basically him. He's just wet. So like, yeah, well, I
just
like
got
him
wet. Right. He fell in the ponds. He's toads. Yeah.
That makes sense.
One synergy he does have with Magneto that I wanted to mention is he's really good at spending power, right? He's got 4 abilities that cost 2 power each, and his only generator is a 4 damage tongue lash. So he does like Magneto's leadership for powering up before he activates.
That's a good point. I guess as far as 2 threat characters go, he can dump his power pretty quickly.
Yep. Yeah, he can quite easily hop and double acid spit, and that is not a very efficient turn, but it could still be what you need.
Yeah, so I think we like all of the Brotherhood characters we covered today, and now we have some really powerful cards. So for the sake of brevity, let's go ahead and start with the cards, and how about Book of Truth? Or Books of Truth? I think it's multiple books, right?
The Books of Truth, many books. So this is a Brotherhood of Mutants card. It's reactive. When an allied Brotherhood of Mutants character is attacking or defending, at the end of the modified dice step of the attack, before the calculate success or failure step, it may spend 2 power to play this card. This character rerolls all of their attack or defense dice, including failure results.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. To explain this in a different way, this is similar to Recalibration Matrix, right? Maybe I shouldn't even go down this line because it's got so many exceptions that it's not that similar. But the key similarity is that this changes dice at the end of the modified dice step. So that is after everything else has been rolled. So if, for example, you're attacking with Magneto's reverse polarity, he rolls his 6 dice. He can then reroll any number of those dice with the effect of the attack. And then after that, he could use this card and reroll a bunch of skulls, for example, plus everything else. It's a good way to get a do-over on an attack or defense roll. And for 2 power, it's fairly cheap, especially because it lets you reroll skulls. I like it as an insurance policy. right? It gives you a chance to correct a bad roll.
Yeah, I think it's a good card. I don't think it's an amazing card. It definitely makes your eight, though. I think it's just a powerful card, especially, like you said, if you're going to be making a team focus on attacking, it's definitely something you want with you, right?
Yeah, I think it is a, like you said, it's a good card. It's at its best, I think, when you have very powerful attacks and defenses, right? It's going to help Magneto save him from a bad roll, right? Where he has six defense dice and rolls a bunch of skulls. This can help him stay alive. It's going to be better using things like Sabretooth's attack. Sabretooth's attack, where he wants to get a hit and a wild in order to get his second attack trigger, is really going to like having the Books of Truth to give you that reroll if you need it.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, right? But this is going to happen after the defender finishes modifying their dice as well?
Yes. And of course, there's a couple of very corner case interactions. So for example, if you're against Venom and Venom's attacking you, you can't reroll your defense dice against him. And similarly, if you're attacking MODOK, MODOK can turn all your wilds into blanks, and then you can use the Book of Truth, and you get to keep your wilds. So there's some weird stuff that can happen with this card that could be useful.
Yeah, so I think we both like the card, though, right?
Yeah, I like it. I think it would make my eight. The only challenge with Brotherhood is they've got loads of good cards, as we've mentioned several times already, and it might get pushed out just for space reasons, but I think it's good.
Important to shout this out, and one of the reasons that I like Magneto, if you have ever had issues with MODOK, you should explore playing Magneto. I think we'll leave it there.
Yes. I mean, we already mentioned his six Mystic Defense and his very strong throws, and this card is just an extra layer of anti-MODOK ability, right?
Yeah, so if you have some irrational hatred for MODOK, you should explore playing Magneto. So next up, I think, is Mystique's special card, or where do you want to go? Do we want to keep covering the Brotherhood cards?
Let's cover the Brotherhood cards, even though this one was in Mystique's box. Let's cover the Brotherhood cards, and then come back to Mystique's and Magneto's individual cards. So Brotherhood has one more Brotherhood-specific card, and then it has a card that gets better in Brotherhood but is not Brotherhood-specific, and then there's some other cards as well. So the second Brotherhood of Mutants card is Asteroid M. It's an active card. Two Brotherhood of Mutants characters can spend two power each to play this card. Place one of the two characters not holding an objective token within range one of the other character. So this is identical to Mothership from Black Order. When we talked about Mothership, we discussed how we thought it was one of the most powerful tactics cards in the game, and I think Asteroid M is also incredibly powerful.
Yeah, the only thing I want to add on to that is this is a lot easier to use if you're using Magneto's leadership. You end up with a lot of power on a bunch of different characters. You can definitely have enough room for an Asteroid Mothership.
Yeah, it's really good with his leadership. It's also just really good with him, right? He often wants to be... he's a slow murder machine. So being able to move to one of the other Brotherhood characters, all of who are really fast, is a very strong synergy.
Yeah, I cannot agree more.
So we love that card. Then we've got the semi-Brotherhood card, which is Magnetic Refraction. It's an unaffiliated card. It's active, and it says Magneto can spend two power to use the card. Magneto gets cover this round. Allied characters gain cover while within range three of Magneto this round. Then it says, if your squad is using the Brotherhood of Mutants affiliation, return this card to your available team tactics cards during the cleanup phase. This card may be played again this game.
So it's interesting, right? Both X-Men, right, good guys, quote-unquote, and bad guys have a way to, like, have cover for the large majority of the game?
Yes. And this cover, I mean, giving Magneto cover all the time, it's really good. People often make this mistake, so I just wanted to call it out. You don't ignore this by being within range 2. That's only cover from terrain. You will always get this cover, except against attacks that specifically ignore cover, which are not very many.
Yeah, this is Rocket Raccoon level cover, correct?
Yes. So it's a big defensive boost. And the fact that it's on your most powerful character is strong. The fact that it helps other characters is strong. And then in particular, the fact that if you're playing Brotherhood, you can use this every turn of the game. It's essentially an extra superpower on Magneto. And then, in my opinion, it becomes very strong.
Yeah, it does. I mean, negatives to it. You do have to play it on, Magneto has to play it, but that's really the only negative, right? It's an incredibly powerful, strong card.
Yeah, and worth pointing out there, Magneto has to play it, but it doesn't have to be in his activation. Right, you can play this in the first activation of your turn, no matter who is activating, and give Magneto and everyone near him cover for the rest of the round.
Yep, the only negative is, yeah, like I said, Magneto has to pay the two. But this is an incredibly powerful card, and we haven't really seen the recycling mechanic before. This always makes my five. I have not taken Magneto and not had it in my five.
Yeah, it's good. It's interesting because MODOK has a card like this. Right, MODOK is another powerful piece you want to protect who sits in the middle of your team. And his card gives you cover within range 4. So it's even better, but it costs more power to use and it isn't recycled. And MODOK's card never gets taken, which is probably unfair. Because having seen how good this card is, I probably now would consider MODOK's. But Magnetic Refraction has been incredible. And I think the main thing is just the fact that you can use it every round and just be consistently hard to kill.
Yeah, and I think Psychic Fortress is a solid card to your point. But Magnetic Refraction is just, it's a really good card.
I feel like you only replied there because you knew the name of the card and you wanted to rub it in my face.
No, that wasn't.
No? Okay, my mistake.
Yeah. I'm shocked you didn't know the name of the card. But so obviously they've... Three cards that we really like, right? I think like the Book of Truth is the worst one. I don't think that's a stretch to say, but it's still a solid card.
It's still great. If it was in any other affiliation, I would take it every time. It's just that this is three incredible affiliated cards. Now, the fact that one of them needs Magneto and the other one benefits Magneto the most means that maybe I end up playing Book of Truth more if I'm playing lower threat games and I'm running Mystique as my leader, I'm not taking Magneto, but I think if you have Magneto on the table, you're likely to see these cards very often.
Yeah, so did we want to cover Mystique's specific card next, which I believe is Deception?
Yeah, we also have a Magneto-specific card that I left out of the show notes, so apologies for that one.
Let me pull up my notes.
I will just talk to it from memory, and hopefully I get it right, but listeners, please be forgiving if I get bits of it wrong.
It's his attack.
Magnetic Crush.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a range 4, 6 dice physical attack. You have to spend 5 power to use the card. And when you make the attack, you can destroy any amount of terrain that's within range 2 of the target. And you add dice to the attack equal to the size of all of the terrain destroyed. So if I destroy 2 size 2 cars when attacking you, then my 6 dice attack becomes a 10 dice attack.
Yep, and you can only destroy terrain features size 3 or less, so you can't blow up size 4 or size 5.
Cool. So this is a really interesting card. It's very powerful, but it's expensive. Normally, I'm not a huge fan of cards that give you better attack actions, but I just wanted to call out that for Magneto, it gives him a range 4 attack that he doesn't otherwise have access to, and he's a character that is often able to get the power to use this effect. Plus, of course, it synergizes with his leadership and refunds power. So I think it has a place.
The other thing it does is I believe it does damage to other characters within 2. I think it does 1 point of automatic damage. I think it has a place. I think the problem is they have so many other good cards. For me, Crush just didn't make it in. And in a lot of games, I'm running out of terrain. So I'm not super excited to blow up a whole lot of pieces of terrain in a single attack, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. I think it's fine. The competition for cards that are good with Magneto is so steep that I don't think I would take this card often, but I love how cool it is and how thematic it is.
Yeah, it is very thematic, and you can roll some obscene numbers of dice with the thing.
You can live the dream, right? You can some sort of mega attack, and that's really cool. I don't know. It's cool. I like it. I won't play it often, but I'll enjoy it when I do.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment.
Okay, and then there's 2 more cards we need to talk about. The one that really matters, because it's not just a reprint, is Mystique's card, Deception. Oh boy. Have you read this card, TT?
I have read the card. It's a very Pat Dunford card.
It is a spicy card. It is an unaffiliated card. Active, Mystique may play this card. Choose an enemy character within range 4 of this character. If there are no other non-dazed enemy characters within range 2 of the chosen character, you may advance the chosen character its speed towards Mystique. So Mystique picks someone who's not near their friends and convinces them to come nearer to her. It doesn't cost any power to play. It's range 4. It lets them move equal to their speed.
Yeah, it's really good.
Right? It's really good.
And then it doesn't matter if the character's near their friends, right? It only checks for enemies, correct?
Yeah, enemies of Mystique, right? Because Mystique is playing the card.
Oh, you're right. I had that inversed. Okay, nope, you're correct.
Yeah, so if they're near their friends, then they get convinced not to be duped by the shape changer. But if they're on their own, then they get duped every time.
Yeah, and it's like I said, it moving them speed can be like an incredible amount of distance you end up moving them, right? And yep. Same as Magenta, right? Mystique has to play this, but not during her activation. It's an incredibly powerful card.
Yeah, it's very strong. There's a couple of things that I wanted to call out for it. The first is the requirement to be near friends, I think, is something that is confusing and people will often forget. And I saw a lot of people excitedly talking about how this card is good against bodyguards, but why would it be good against a bodyguard? Because bodyguards are in the range too. So I just wanted to call that out. It's not good at breaking up kind of defensive formations, but rather picking on lone characters. And for that reason, it's probably going to be best used early. And it certainly makes turn one plays really difficult, right? You are not incentivized to move a long mover to the middle of the table when they have Mystique on their team.
Yeah, I think that's the common way that I see it used effectively. And like you said, Pat, before, like it having no power cost, you really need to be careful of your opening turn use of this. The other thing is I like it on individual flanks, right? If you choose to have Mystique go out as, or she can, excuse me, if you choose to, Mystique can go out and disrupt your opponent's solo flank. We've talked about a few different characters that tend to hold solo flank positions well. Deception can just get them off of that and really put them in a position they don't like to be in. So it's an incredible card. Any card that doesn't cost power and has an action associated with it, to me, is insane. Let alone an action for your opponent. It's really good.
Yeah, I also want to call out, this is on a character who's got a long move. So the fact that she can use this card for free with her long move and range 4 means she can use it on pretty much any part of the table if you really need to.
Yeah, and what's the other card you like that moves a character but then they get to make an attack?
Face Me.
Yeah, so it has the good part of Face Me without the bad part, right? Like it's a really powerful tactic card.
Yeah, there's one other thing I wanted to mention about this card, and shout out to Blog Gunner on our Discord for bringing this up. But there's a weird rules thing with this, and I'm going to talk about how it works, but I do feel like this is the kind of rule that might get clarified, and what I say now might not prove to be the case in future. But just calling out, this is an advance toward, and that's weird because advances don't have to be in a straight line. But when you're moving toward, your movement has to be within the 90-degree angle. And specifically, it has to be in the 90-degree angle on kind of like an infinite length, right? If you imagine the 90-degree angle stretched throughout the entire table, you have to move in such a way that you would never cross that if your movement continued. And that can be a bit weird with advances because you can change your direction. So, there, for example, it's actually really hard with this card to move around terrain because your final movement still has to have you within the 90-degree angle. And it's really hard to bend your movement stick and for that to be the case. And so I think good counterplay to this card is putting your characters next to terrain that is larger than them, because then it will be very hard for them to move towards Mystique.
No, that's a good point. It's something I hope they clarify, because I honestly don't look forward to explaining that in a game. But
did I even make sense explaining it? I feel like it's a really weird rules interaction.
Well, yeah, so where your character ends doesn't necessarily dictate whether it's legal is what you're trying to say, right? It is the theoretical of if your character was to extend on that line infinitely, would it ever cross the 90-degree threshold? And if the answer is yes, then it's not a legal move.
Yes. Yes.
And yeah, the fact that we are struggling to express this in a podcast means I really don't want to talk about it in a game. Mm-hmm. So yeah, maybe they'll clarify that. But it is good to point out, and I think our listeners will get it.
I hope so. Yeah, in any case, though, what a card. I love it.
Yeah, it is the... It's kind of cemented for me, like, okay, I'm taking Mystique, right? This card is really good.
Yeah, for me, like, when we review things like TTS leagues, we look at how often cards are taken with their characters. I feel like this is one of those cards that's going to define Mystique as a character. This is going to be like Usurp the Throne. If you're considering the character, you're considering this card. I think it's really, really strong. And for the time being, for me at least, it's stapled to Mystique. I'm going to be trying it in any situation, regardless of if I'm playing in Brotherhood or not, to see what kind of cool things I can do with it.
Yeah, it's a really, really bonkers card. So there's one more card we need to cover quickly, and this is similar to what we had in the Wolverine and Sabretooth box, right? We have a reprint of Heave Ho.
Yeah. Heave Ho! So the points about Heave Ho, I don't really want to repeat it because it's in the core set, but it's a throw, right? There's probably very intentional that it's with Magneto because it's a tactics card that synergizes with his leadership, which is cool. And it has artwork of Toad and Blob. And this is the first time we've seen Blob in MCP. So that gives me hope that maybe one day he will waddle his way onto the tabletop.
Yeah, so again, it's nice to see reprints. It's some cool art on there. You can heave ho with Mystique to deny them Brace for Impact, but that seems really corner case. And yeah, it is very fitting, right, that it's reprinted with Magneto. So I like to see it there. And we do have a crisis to kind of to round it out. And the crisis is kind of groundbreaking, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And it's groundbreaking because it's our first 14 threat crisis. How low can you go? The answer is 14 threat.
You could play less.
You could if you want to be really brave. And in fact, you might have to because you might discover you just don't have a way to make 14 threat in your roster, which is something to keep in mind.
That's fair.
Yeah, the crisis itself is called Mutant Extremists Target US Senators, and it uses the C-map. It's an extract. You place three safe house tokens randomly on the C-map. One of them has a picture of a senator on it. The other two don't. And you score two victory points if you hold the senator in the cleanup phase. You interact with the safe house, and that you flip it over straight away, and if it's blank, you remove the token. And if it's got the senator, you pick him up. And then as long as you've got the senator, your speed becomes short and you roll one less dice on defense and dodge rolls.
It's a lot.
It is a lot.
I don't know how I feel about this one personally.
So I've played this one a few times now and I have a lot of thoughts on it. You ready?
Yeah, that's good for a podcast. What do you got?
Okay. Thought number one, 14 threat changes how you build your squads and your rosters. And it feels really bad to be playing three characters on 14 threat. And four is fine, but sometimes not what you want to be doing. And I think it encourages taking more cheap characters in your roster. I think it makes you consider taking a second two threat in more rosters and taking more three threats than you might otherwise do. And I think we were already edging towards more cheap characters anyway. But for me, this solidifies that. So that's my first thought. What do you think about that, TT?
I think that makes a lot of sense. You want the flexibility. Why am I blanking his name? Morgan from Australia. Very good player, right? He talked about trying to force your opponent into bad threat values. I don't think you want to be caught where you obviously don't have a good 14, right?
Yes. And then my second thought on this is like an improved version of Alienship and Skrulls, because it doesn't make you roll critical hits to get the stupid token. Oh my gosh, I really appreciate this double-sided token technology that's freed us from the monotony of having to interact and failing every single time.
Yeah, definitely different, right? I think when I take Skrulls or Alienships, I'm hoping it'll be a dead scenario, like it doesn't ever get flipped, right? With this one, I don't think you can count on that, right? The Senator is going to show up.
It's incredibly life. It's going to appear on turn one as long as the players want it to. But it is only scoring 2 points a turn, so it's not a fast crisis by any means, but it is guaranteeing a single high priority extract, and that might heavily influence your team composition, right? Because when you're guaranteeing that's going to happen on turn one, the ability to chase after it or have a resilient character hold it is more valuable.
Yeah, I do think it's also interesting with this one. Like, do you want to be the first person to find the senator, or do you want your opponent to be the first person? Right. So it makes kind of an interesting shell game there.
Yes. The next point I have to make is because it flips, it strongly advantages the player with priority if they do want to pick it up. Because the player with priority can use their first and second activations and they have a 2/3 chance of getting it, whereas the other player, at best, has a 1/3 chance of getting it. But like you said, what's really cool about this crisis is because you suffer big penalties for holding the senator, you don't necessarily want to be that player. So it's not necessarily a big disadvantage not to have priority, but it is something to consider, and especially if you can find a clever way to take advantage of this extract and maybe be able to move more with it or escape with it, then it could be a very strong choice when you have priority to select it.
Yeah, very fair. So I personally am not super excited about 14, but I'm excited to see AMG continue to push and innovate. Do have to go through all my rosters and revamp them, but that's okay because we're rotating in Magneto anyway. So a good addition. It'll be interesting to see how popular it is. And I do like it a lot more than Ships and Skrulls. So
I tell you what, I do think it's cool because every time we see a different crisis, it favors different teams, and I love how it could potentially change things or shake things up. And it just shows how many ways there are for the meta in this game to evolve. But for example, you can play Guardians of the Galaxy with this crisis, and you can run 6 characters. And you can have characters like Drax and Groot be your interactors, right? And if you have priority, there's a 1/3 chance that Groot's going to get it and a 1/3 chance that Drax is going to get it. Guaranteed. And those characters are really good at holding it, even with the penalties. And like 6 characters at 14 threat, imagine if your opponent's playing 3.
Yeah, it can definitely end up in a weird game there.
Yeah, so I like that each crisis can create its own mini game in terms of what are good teams and good strategies to use. And as we get more and more, it's just going to become increasingly diverse.
Yeah, and I do think it's important to point out that like other games release new scenarios all the time, but they normally don't release them in character boxes, right? So normally we'd be rating for like, what's the 2021 tournament packet look like? And then we would do a big podcast and break down like 5 to 7 different scenarios, right? And yeah. Here we're just kind of fed them over the course of the year. So it's not like they're doing something crazy here, right? Like all games are kind of doing this. I guess the main difference is like their crises right now are kind of evergreen. And the fact that you're only picking half the crises, right? Because it has very different implications depending on what you pair this with, right? Like that 6-wide Guardians on Gamma is different than the 6-wide Guardians on a D, right? Where you're really spreading out that other 3-person team. So I do agree with you that it introduces some interesting elements to the game that we previously didn't have to think about, right?
Yeah, exactly. I also feel really sad because I've just done the maths and I've realized you can't take the Guardians team with both Groot and Drax. So you have to have one plus like Okoye as your second.
That's 6, and then you have 8 left over. So then you could do what? Rocket, Okoye. Oh no, okay, yeah.
So yeah, you basically get Star-Lord plus a 3-threat Guardian. You get Nebula, Rocket, and then 2 unaffiliated 2-threat characters. So like Okoye and Toad, for example.
That's not a bad team though.
No, it's cool.
I actually kind of like Toad with Guardians. Tossing out that Incinerate, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, right. And he's perfectly good for holding the senator, right? He picks him up at longer range with his tongue, and then if you attack him, he hops away.
Yeah, I kind of like that. I actually really like Incinerate I really like Toad with Guardians. That's actually, they have so many low-value attacks, right? Losing that one die is pretty big for them.
Yes. Yeah, he seems like a really good character for them.
All right, well, hopefully you enjoyed part 2 of our X-Men extravaganza. We definitely have more X-Men-related content coming up for you. If you want to stay tuned for some additional content, be sure to check out our after-the-credit scenes, which are available every week for our patrons. It's a little 10, 15, sometimes 20-minute bonus episode that Pat and I record. So thank you all so much for listening, patrons or not. We really do appreciate each and every one of you. I hope you all stay safe. It's kind of getting crazy out there in the world again. Until next time, everyone, cheers and happy gaming.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a pod that I've heard of once in a lullaby. Skies are blue. that you dare to dream really do